You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
We will now move on to our last piece of the show with a bit of a blast from the past. And by past, I mean 25,000 years ago. Funny joke. A recent study by a team of Kiwi researchers surrounding the extinct eastern moa, has given a fresh insight into how the species reacts to climate change. By simultaneously analyzing millions of pieces of DNA from moa fossils, researchers could see how the moa changed their distribution as the climate heated and cooled. I spoke to Nick Rawlins from the Paleogenetics Lab at the University of Otago on the subject. I started off by asking him about the study's findings.
So this work was done by my fantastic PhD student, Alex Ferry, who's now doing a postdoc at the University of Toulouse in the Paris Museum of Natural History. And it focused on the extinct eastern moa. So it's a large stocky moa, about 80 kilograms in weight, with short stocky legs. And females were about 15 to 20% bigger than males. Now, at the height of the last ice age, all of the fossils of the species are all restricted to the southern South Island. Yet during the current warm interglacial, the Holocene that we find themselves in, the fossils are spread throughout the southern South Island right up the east coast. And so that's kind of suggestive that something big happened with changing climate. So what Alex did is he managed to extract ancient DNA from eastern moa bones through space and time and sequence the complete mitochondrial genome of these individuals. So this is the genomes that are passed down through the female line, through mother to daughter. And what that really showed is that as the climate went from warm in the current interglacial to cold at the height of the Ice Age, Eastern Moa contracted to southern New Zealand and lost a lot of genetic diversity. You've gone from the genetic diversity of the size of Auckland to the genetic diversity of a royal family, which is not much. And then we see the signatures when the climate warms, you get this signature of post-glacial expansion out of southern New Zealand.
Would you say that this study helped gather some more information or even just more general knowledge about moas in general?
What we're finding is that when you look at how climate change affected a lot of the big animals in the world, the megafauna like mammoths and mastodons, it always used to be, if you've worked out, say, what caused the demise of the mammoth, it was the same cause across all the big animals, whether that was mastodon or woolly rhino or a prehistoric horse. What we're showing with the moa is that every species is an individual. They're all having individualistic responses to climate change. So eastern moa contracted to a refugium in the southern South Island. The heavy-footed moa, the Cartman of the moa world, went to two separate refugia, one in the southern South Island, one in the northern South Island. The mountain goat of moa, upland moa, went to four far-flung areas of the South Island. So you can't had this broad brush approach to looking at how moa responded to climate change. You've got to go in and look at how each individual species responded.
I guess, would this highlight how climate change has an impact on different species? And maybe is that an indicator of what we're seeing right now with some species in New Zealand?
No, definitely. It's showing that we can't have these broad brush approaches to how species are going to respond to climate change in the future. They're all going to respond in their own individual way. So you need to have individually tailored conservation policies for each species, not just at conserving the animal, but also conserving its habitat. With Eastern Moa, it tracked changes in the distribution of its habitat with climate change. And animals now going into the future, they need to have habitat or habitat corridors to be able to respond. So the analogy is it's no use having an animal that lives on a mountainside that as climate warms, it gets pushed further and further up the mountainside and then it runs out of mountain and goes extinct. Or an animal that lives up the top of the South Island and can only be pushed so far before it hits the ocean and can't move any further. So you need these individually tailored conservation strategies for species to help them survive future climate change.
Now, were there any questions from the study which maybe went unanswered? Maybe there's a few, how do I say this?
Loose ends?
Yeah, loose ends.
Yeah, definitely. So we've just looked at the mitochondrial genome passed down through the female line. We haven't yet looked at the nuclear genome, so the entire genetic blueprint of Eastern Moa. And this is work that my postdoc, Karen Mitchell, who's working on a Marsden Fund study, is going to be looking at, where he's going to be sequencing the genomes of all New Zealand's extinct Moa. And so one of the big questions is, what is the population demography, or how has the population changed through time when we look at the nuclear genome? So we can, instead of looking back to the height of the last ice age 19 to 29,000 years ago with mitochondrial genomes, we'll be able to look back millions of years ago, 2.5 million years ago. So how has Eastern Moa adapted to climate change or responded? Has it always had low genetic variation? Also, has this low genetic variation increased its extinction risk as well? So it's this thing of ghosts of ice ages past.
With these findings that help answer a lot of questions about the past, or I guess that's kind of the whole purpose of fossils.
Yeah, we need to be able to reconstruct past ecosystems and prehistoric ecosystems to see how they function, and that gives an idea of how they were impacted by humans and climate change. We know in New Zealand that East Polynesian colonists arrived at a time of stable climate, so we can quite easily separate out human impact, the extinctions that were due to humans, versus pre-human impacts, which were due to climate change or volcanism or dynamic geological activity in New Zealand. But how animals responded in the past allows us to predict how they may respond in the future as well.
And I guess that would help with what the impact that climate change has on society and wildlife today.
Yeah, no, definitely, because as we go forward, it's like the environment is still being degraded. We've destroyed, as humans, habitat and everything, and it's going to give us information on how we can actually best preserve that habitat so animals can respond in the future.
That was Dr. Nick Rawlins from the Paleogenetics Lab at the University of Otago.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.